No, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it. We didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. Good Wednesday morning to you. It is 16 minutes past 9 o'clock on this day after Election Day, the 4th of October. From my calculation, it is a Wednesday. You could fool me. I have no idea. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable. So, our Pins and Needles edition, and we welcome you, and we hope that you will stay with us as we talk about and try to figure out and hypothesize and stew and do all of the things that I think all of us are doing this morning. It is a great pleasure to be in your company. We thank you very much for joining us, as we always do. You are very much... obviously a part of our conversation, and we hope that you will write in and vent. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Just so you have an idea of what we're up to this morning, barring a press conference or breaking news or an announcement by a candidate or something like that, we'll be on till 11 o'clock this morning, and then we will be going over to NPR coverage from 11 to 12, and then, of course, Midday Magazine at 12 o'clock with a wrap-up on all the local races. Quick shout-out to the amazing WAMC news team, which you've been hearing from all morning this morning and heard from last night, and the incredible job they have done and are doing. And kudos, of course, to our news director, Ian Pickus, for orchestrating it all. It's been quite a massive undertaking, so good for them. Let's see. Let's get started. We'll go around the bend. Do we have Bob yet? We do have Bob. Excellent. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. We were on till, I don't know, almost 11 last night. We're back this morning. How many hours sleep did you get?
I think I counted three,
Joe. Yeah, that's about where I am. Yeah.
I think I counted about three. And then I had to go out for my walk in the dark with my light on my head. And I did that. And then
that's
I came
where
back.
We differ.
I'm compulsive.
I didn't do that.
I know it's crazy. But in any case, I went to bed last night, the 3 hours, feeling really bad. I woke up this morning and I felt a hell of a lot better, to be honest with you. I think a lot of other people did too. I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say anything, but I think things are going in the right direction.
Well, we'll talk and we'll figure out where we are right now. I have to also kudos to Sarah LaDuke, who brought me, gifted me some sort of caramel mocha concoction that just has a lot of caffeine, 2 pumps of mocha and 2 pumps of toffee nut syrup. This is making me feel better. That singularly is making me feel better. I may need 4 more years of them. Good morning to you, Alan, and thank you very much. And we had fun last night, right? I mean, it was a weird night, but it was good and everything went well. And thank you very much for all of that. Chris Churchill is with us, Times Union columnist. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing well. I got about 4 hours of sleep, so I think I'm in okay shape.
Okay, we're going to see what the difference of 3 and 4 hours is. Is this 2 hour cavalcade rolls out? Bob Griffin is with us, Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Cybersecurity at the University of Albany. Hello, Bob. Hello, Bob. All right, we're working on the Opal app, so we'll get Bob back on. He was on, he was off, he's on. So we'll get him back, I know. Rosemary Armeo is with us, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Hello, Rosemary. How are you?
I'm still here. I'm still here. I slept intermittently for 6 hours on and off, and I'm in despair.
Yeah. Well,
but I haven't for a while, so that will be boring for people.
But one thing is for sure, you were absolutely right, and I got to tip my hat to you, Rosemary, about how close this was going to be.
I have no desire to be right. I did send a note to JP yesterday saying, hey, it's 10:30. You lied to me. But, I'm not surprised. I think the signs were there. I think Biden can still pull this off. Both men have a path to 270. But whoever wins, I think that we are clearly a country in trouble, and that is not a surprise, but it's so depressing to think about. Trump, despite 4 years of just horrible actions of ignorance and corruption and bigotry, made inroads on every class of voters, minorities, women, black men, Latinos. That's shocking to me. And we have returned to the legislature in Washington some of the most horrific characters in our history, McConnell, Cindy Hyde Smith, Elise Stefanik, they're all going back. And I'm depressed even knowing that, as Alice said, there is reason to be optimistic about Biden winning.
Bob Griffin, you are there?
Yes.
Hello.
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes. So what we've asked panelists so far is how long you have slept and what is your general mood?
Okay, I'm ready to go.
Okay, you ready? How many hours?
Yeah. 2.
All right. That sucks.
That's brutal.
Right. Yeah, that is brutal.
I am here, Joe.
No wonder we had it was a while for us to connect with you. Jennifer Burns is here, UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies. Jennifer, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. I got 6 hours of sleep. It was a little fitful, but it was 6.
Wow. Did you?
And I'm not. Yeah, yeah.
Did you take a sleeping aid or anything?
No. I went to bed really seeing what was happening and knowing that that was possible for many weeks.
Yeah.
So in some sense, I went to bed right, and that made it a little bit better. And now, of course, the other side of that is, it's horrific to see how close things are, and also some of the overwhelming victories in different states that Trump has won by.
Well, there are little pieces of things to take, you know, great hope in and to move forward. Look, I think this whole election thing is overshadowing another big story, which is the fact that weed is now legal in New Jersey. Let us not forget that, ladies and gentlemen. Also,
hey, Joe, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank goodness.
No, I kept asking you questions, but that's okay. Again, you're only on 2 hours of sleep. So
I am on 2 hours of sleep, and Mike Bowen stayed really close to that button today. And if I could request a song, it's I Need to Be Sedated by the Ramones at one of the breaks.
Well, the other thing, too, I think about this is that, you know, day drinking may just become more popular than ever. So we welcome you all to the conversation. We welcome your letters. We have a lot already. Panel@WAMC.org. So let's do this. Right now, I'm going to just try to weakly explain where we are. We are basically waiting for final results in seven states. Those seven states would be Nevada, where 86% of the vote in and Joe Biden is winning 49.3% to Donald Trump's 48.7%. Arizona, Joe Biden is ahead by 4 or 5 percentage points with 82% of the vote counted. We go to Georgia, where Donald Trump is leading by a percentage point and a half with 92% of the vote counted. North Carolina, where the president is also leading 50 to 48%. In Pennsylvania, Donald Trump is winning and winning big, 55 to 43%. However, 25% of the vote still needs to be counted, much of that vote from the cities, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Michigan, Joe Biden is leading, not by much, 0.2%. But as of right now, Michigan is leaning blue. Wisconsin, also leaning blue, with Joe Biden 49.5% to 48.8%. If I am doing the math correctly, and I do not, I will assure you that I do not know this for sure, but if I am doing the math correctly, that the path for victory for Joe Biden would be that you keep Arizona, you keep Nevada, you win Wisconsin, you win Michigan, and then you don't need Pennsylvania.
Yep. Right.
If you give,
that's exactly how I read it.
Okay. If you give the president Georgia, North Carolina, then he would need Pennsylvania and then one of the other states, either Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, or Nevada. So both are possible, and both are very possible. And we, depending on the state and depending on what you look at and the boards of election, the votes are being counted, will be counted. And in some cases, Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, for example, will be counted over the next several days. Same with Arizona. So this is going to be protracted, not just through, we'll know more probably by the end of today, but we certainly may not know a definitive outcome. So with that brief summation, we're going to have to take a break in just a second, but with that brief summation, Alan, give us your thoughts on what we just laid out.
Well, if everything stays stead, then Biden wins. If, in fact, some of the things that you talked about, which were so close, turn around, then it's possible Trump would win. But I'm thinking, and I'm a pessimist by nature, I'm thinking that Biden is going to win this thing.
So what does that mean? this is going to be a really dumb question, but what does it mean when he wins with 270 electoral votes? Obviously, I mean, the president has already declared victory. So this is not going to be, even if he has the numbers and we say, okay, with all of the votes counted, wink, wink, this is what we have. We're still in for a long fight, right?
We are, but let's remember that Donald Trump became the president of the United States having gotten fewer votes than Hillary Clinton by 3 million nationally, and pretended and acted like he had been elected by a landslide. I don't think, you know, I'll take Biden being the president, to be honest with you. And I don't think it goes any further than that. I don't think we have to worry about how few votes he got.
No, but I'm talking about because it's so close, then that means that there's going to be a lot of court action following it. I mean, if it yep. is declared, then yep. you're going to go after Wisconsin. You're going to go after Nevada. You're going to sure. go after Arizona and the vote counts in those states.
Well, you know, he bragged that he put Barrett on the court so that when he needed to go after the election. And by the way, this guy who declared that he was the president in the middle of the night when he wasn't and declared that he had won when he hadn't, he really is in a situation where he knew from minute one, once those absentee ballots got counted, that he was in real trouble. And that's what that was all about.
We have so much to discuss this morning, and when we come back, we will do it with our amazing panel. Alan Shartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns. We're going to hit the newscast, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Many issues to bring up. We do welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We're going to 11 o'clock this morning. We welcome you to join us. WAMC.org. Need a lot of leaning and doing a lot of leaning over the next 2 or 3 days. But here we are, and we're leaning on each other. We have a wonderful panel, Alan Shartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns. Right before the break, we went to Alan, got his perspective. I'd like to go around for the rest of the group. Chris Churchill, what do you think?
Well, what strikes me is that after all the noise of the last 4 years, after, you know, all the everything that's been said and talked about, how similar the result is to what it was last time. I mean, I do think Biden will pull this out. But, you know, it's essentially the same with a little bit of change at the margins. It's a very similar yeah. race. I mean, Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes. At this point, it looks like Biden's going to win by about 3 million votes. I mean, there's more people turned out on both sides. There was energy on both sides. And I think you know, I think the pollsters missed the energy on the Republican side. I think it was a disastrous night for pollsters. I mean, if you looked at the polls over the weekend, except with a few exceptions, you would have thought this was a landslide coming for Democrats, and it just wasn't. It's a nail biter, and it looks like Republicans will hang on to the Senate. It looks like they may gain some seats in the House. It's just a you know, there, I do think that there's something to the idea that there's a shy Trump vote out there, people who aren't willing to say at the pollsters who they intend to vote for. And I think pollsters have to really, really look at how they're conducting these things. I mean, maybe we just should stop listening to them for a little while, because they really need to get their act together.
I'm not sure I can ever listen to them again, but I'm sure I'll get over that. You know, one of the things about it, you bring up a great point, and I'd like to get to it a little bit later. I want to get to everybody, but and further initial thoughts. But I would like to come back to this idea of, is it the methodology that needs to be looked at, or is it that quote unquote shy Trump voter and people are not admitting to it, which I think is worthy of discussion. Rosemary Armeo, go.
Well, I wrote last night on my Facebook page, I'm never reading a poll again. This is way beyond margin of error. Chris is right. There's just something fundamentally missing in their methodology, and we've not I didn't put stock in them, but that was just very clear. I'm also thinking about how much work has to be done by the parties. The Democratic Party is the one I care about, to reach out to its constituencies, to blacks, to Latinos, to women, to seniors. I keep hearing the argument that, oh, if only we'd had an exciting young candidate, some of the people we saw debating in the spring, we might have gotten more young votes. But, God, we say that every election. I want to know why black women voted for Trump. I want to know why Latinos, and I know they're multidimensional and they're not voting as a bloc, but here's the thing. Why aren't they voting as a bloc against Donald Trump? I don't think we understand that. It's not enough to say they're diverse. Of course they're diverse. So are women. But why were any women voting for Donald Trump? I don't understand that. And what's missing in our
politics
now is any requirements for integrity. I look at some of the people who got sent back to the Senate, and that fills me with gloom. And I really do not have good feelings towards my fellow Americans right now. I think I was right to go out of the country. If I were free, I would be back out of the country.
Jennifer Burns, what do you make of what Rosemary just said, especially when it comes to black women and voters and black voters in general?
I think that we have to keep in mind the different state policies when it comes to the impact, not only of voter suppression, but also of the impact of mass incarceration. And if African-American voters, men or women, are living in states where they are still unable to vote because of felony convictions, then that has a major impact on some of those who probably would vote towards Democrats. So that's one of the things. The other thing is, you know, over the weekend, and actually really a lot last week too, it was looking at the media, pollsters, you know, people are really paying attention to very wealthy African-American men in particular. We're going to throw 50 Cent out there and others who were supporting Donald Trump. And I would say when it comes to that, it's about economics. Because for men who are in that higher income level, they want to, and perhaps had not had that growing up and have now attained it, they want to keep those taxes low. So they are willing to go there and support this man to keep money in their pocket. And I think that is something that involves some male privilege, regardless of what race you are, because poor white men want to do the same thing. And wealthy white men want to do the same thing. And so it helps Donald Trump quite a bit to have that support. When it comes to Latinos, I think really that the Democrats have lost many of them in many places. And when it comes to the fact that we had Biden as the presidential candidate, was a little problematic too, because it goes to who's registered in those primaries and who picks or determines, you know, who the presidential candidate for the party will be. And that has played into this in ways that really haven't been examined yet.
Bob Griffin.
Oh boy, I've got lots of things to add, Joe. One is that I think I'd be remiss if I didn't toss out some kudos to the Trump strategy and their ground game. I mean, they did a great job, much stronger than I thought. Jennifer, I think your comments about the Latinx vote is spot on, and there has to be a rethink of I think major elements of the Democratic Party if they want to win, particularly in Florida, and I don't think moving to the left is the answer, and I really do see this as a repudiation of a leftward movement. I think that was the distrust, and I agree 100%. It's about the economy. As much as I thought it was going to be about COVID, I thought COVID the driver. Yeah. I really do think it was about the economy. Now, I'm going to say something slightly different, though, Joe. You know, while we sound like we're down, I feel the Biden camp is in a much better position right now than the Trump camp is. So I don't want to lose sight of that.
We just.
But by the way, Joe, yeah. Very quickly, the exit polling did show that the mass of people who were voting were saying the economy is more impressive and more important than the COVID period. So Bob's right about that.
Yeah, and it was one of the early indicators that the race could be, end up the way it has ended up. Chris?
Well, the economy and COVID are obviously tied very closely together,
yes.
Right? I mean, one is hampering the other. But I think one thing that is happening that people are maybe missing a little bit is that there is a kind of a massive, or it seems to be a massive realignment going on that Trump is kind of fueling. The Republican Party is becoming, or has become, the kind of the working class party at this point. And, we can distrust the polling, but this was showing up in the polls even before the election, that the racial gap was narrowing, whereas Trump was picking up more Black and Hispanic voters than people thought that he would, and that he was picking up more than Republicans normally do. And one of the things that could be happening is that blue-collar Hispanic and Black voters, defined as people without college educations generally, are starting to shift, and this is especially true of Hispanics, are starting to shift to the Republicans a little bit. In areas where large percentages of the population do not have college degrees, those are the areas where Trump did the best, excluding some parts of the cities, obviously. But I do think it's something that Democrats really have to look at very closely and analyze. I mean, they used to be the party of working people, and I think now it can seem to people that they are not the party that cares about jobs, and I think that's obviously problematic.
And, that leads right in, Chris, to the question of unions. Unions in America aren't that popular right now. However, and the people who are in the unions, who fit some of the demographics you're talking about, are incredibly important. So the Biden people went around yelling, union, 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 which I think may have missed the point.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Biden, people thought Biden was the guy to go with because he would have appeal in the upper Midwest and appeal to working class white voters and working class Black voters. And he did. I mean, it's interesting to think we can say, well, maybe a younger or more dynamic Democratic candidate might have done better. But I don't know. I mean, if Joe Biden doesn't win Michigan or I think he will, or Pennsylvania,
yes,
or if it's close in those states with Joe Biden, you have to wonder how another Democrat would have done there.
On that issue, Rosemary, when you do look at the other candidates, I mean, I think you got to this point earlier, that is it, I mean, how much of this is really Joe Biden's fault and how much of it is just the divided nature of our country?
Yeah, I think it's the divided nature of the country. There are people who are going to vote Republican no matter what, even if they're hypocrites and liars. There are people who are going to vote Democrat even if they're weak. And Chuck Schumer was getting some credit by the pundits last night for picking good candidates. And there were some that he did. Hickenlooper, for example, who won in Colorado, was a great choice. But, you know, I never thought Jamie Harrison was strong against Lindsey Graham. That Joni Ernst could win against, she had some disastrous performances where she didn't even know about farm pricing in Iowa, and yet she won. There's this great loyalty to people who I just don't think deserve loyalty. I don't know what to make of that other than, you know, my utter black mood right now is just the basic stupidity and blindness of people. And on top of all this is this week the Supreme Court will be considering cases about religious freedom, which will what it's going to translate to is more discrimination, and soon on health care. And these are deliberately against the same self-interest of all the people Chris was just talking about. It's not reason that goes into any of these decisions. It's emotion. It's the feeling of I'm better than you, and my guy's going to tell you that we're going to make America great again. I think it's no more than that. So all this intellectualizing we do, it's for us. It doesn't touch them.
I want to take a break. Go ahead, Alan.
So I was going to say, so even if Joe Biden wins this and becomes the president, he's still going to have a Senate, which is probably at least two votes up for the Republicans, something we ought to keep our eye on.
Absolutely. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a lot of letters and much more to talk about. It is the day after Election Day, and the votes are still coming in. We are watching it all very closely. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns will throw in some of your letters, too, when we come back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 9 minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock on this day after Election Day, the 4th of November. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns, otherwise known as the best panel in show business. Let us go to several letters. We'll continue the conversation by going through these letters. Some are short, some are to the point, and some are very long, and I will edit them. But here we go. Bill writes, if people who voted for Trump the first time claim that I just wanted a change or he's not a politician and says what he means, and then they voted for him again after all that has happened, well, then you are a racist and a lying liar, as Alan would say, just like him. You reap what you sow, and this country is only harvesting weeds now. Christopher says, when will the DNC learn? They continue to nominate corporate puppets as nominees and wonder why they don't win. Come on, man. Earl says, go ahead.
Sorry, wait a second, Joe. I actually think it's just the opposite. I think the tag of being a socialist and being a radical leftist actually resonated in large parts of the country, and I think that the DNC is going to have to figure out how it moves in this new world.
Put another way, would Bernie Sanders have done better?
No.
I mean, no.
The Republicans did put in a corporate puppet, and they won. So if the strategy wins, it just doesn't win for Democrats. That's true.
Let's see. We go.
Well, and I think,
go ahead, Jennifer. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, we haven't talked a lot about Kamala Harris's, how that has impacted this.
Can I ask
you? And a lot of the accusations. Yeah.
Here's a question. I love where you're going. We just got this letter in, so I'm going to give you this and include it in what you're just about to say. Sarah writes and says, I can't help but think the vote reflects a misogynistic and racist attitude toward Kamala Harris. Our government was conceived and designed by white landowning men. White men still hold sway over our elections. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, this also gets at the white suburban women's vote, and we've talked about this a lot. It's been out there a lot. You know, the impact here, first off, Kamala being accused of being a socialist over and over and over again, and people really ridiculing her, you know, response, which is to laugh, right, on that 2020 special to, as a response, people ridiculed that. We see in Georgia, Perdue, who's in such a tight race with Ossoff, and he was making fun of her name and, you know, chastising her in different ways and really putting out some, not just dog whistle racism, but pretty blatant racism towards her. And the victory we have to add in here, I think, is Amy Comer Barrett. And I call it a victory because that's what happened there. I think when people were saying white suburban women were going to be encouraged or think that Trump was a sexist, or, you know, they would side somehow with Kamala Harris as a mother, we saw the opposite take place. There is misogyny, there is racism, and it is really present in how Kamala Harris had been treated the entire time or viewed. But I really do think that people saw her as too radical, and others saw her as too black.
Mm.
The dancing, you know, people picking up on that as if being happy wasn't a nice thing and bringing some good vibes here to what was happening with all the racism and everything around her. Those kind of things are not things that were thrown at other people.
I'm not sure that that's exactly right, Jennifer. I mean, this isn't really about Kamala Harris necessarily, but I think in a lot of ways, if Biden wins, he's going to have won it with pickups in the suburbs. Right. I think that that's where you had kind of a shift. You've had a kind of a dramatic shift away from. If you look at what Mitt Romney did, Mitt Romney was the candidate of the upper middle class suburb. And if you look at those places now, they were in Biden's camp yesterday.
They were. I mean, that's
definitely for every suburban vote that Biden picked up, he lost a little bit of the Hispanic vote in some areas. And I think, I mean, that tends to explain what happened in Florida, for example. But go ahead.
No, Kamala Harris is one of the few things I did right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No,
I just want to say, I think you're right, Jennifer. And I think that she was a big risk for him, knowing that he was going to try to compete with Trump, who has gone for the racist, bigoted, scared vote in America. It was not the smartest thing to pick an outspoken Californian who is a black and other minorities. You know, she's like a multiple threat. And yet that's exactly what Democrats should be doing. You can't win by catering to the racist crowd. That's not a win worth having. So I'm proud that he picked her. That's one of the few things I can say he did right, that and wearing masks and cutting back campaigning as he should have. Those were good things, even if they were not the best for his candidacy.
Jennifer?
Well, and then we look at Florida.
Yes.
Going back to look at the two elections, Obama election, and Floridians and the Hispanic vote came out for Obama. So they did not for Hillary Clinton. So is there a sexism role in there, or was it just what was that, right? Was it, how did that work out? And then we're here with Biden, who was so connected to Obama, And I think that hurt the vote when you add Kamala into it in Florida. Because of that fear, we saw a lot take place up to the election about Kamala or Bernie Harris or even not Bernie Harris, Bernie Sanders, and also Elizabeth Warren being too socialist. And in the Latinx community, the Republicans were really pushing that that was going to be a nightmare for the experience of people of, you know, Caribbean descent, of any fashion that we're living in America. And I think that that really had a huge impact in flipping Florida and pushing Florida, keeping it away from Democrats in this election as well. And Arizona, yes, we're still waiting on the results.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Go ahead, Bob.
If I could, Joe, I think that, you know, the Democrats also didn't walk their own walk. You know, they were talking about, you know, changing Georgia and changing Texas. And the Obama election was a long time ago. And I don't think that they've kept up that they've kept up with some of the changing demographics, particularly in Florida. And that's, Jennifer, I think your point is spot on.
Well, I'd just like to say that I watched, I'll be quick about it. I watched Obama, and then I watched Biden right after Obama. And Joe Biden ain't no Obama. Obama is an unbelievable talent and an incredible politician. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's a hard act to follow, absolutely. The
question is, did Obama going out on the trail for Biden in this last few weeks hurt Biden?
No, it helped
because
them.
There were many people who I'm saying amongst Republicans, what we're seeing, right, is that it's clear we needed some Republicans to flip and vote for Biden.
We asked
Otherwise,
the same,
this would not be as close as it is.
We asked the same question, Jennifer, didn't we, in 2016, that Obama was campaigning very heavily for Hillary Clinton, and the same question was asked then. Did that help?
Well, because you can't get around Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton lost because she was Hillary Clinton. I know I'm going to get garbage for that. She got 3 million more votes. Hold your letters, folks. She got 3 million more votes. But the fact of the matter is, she lost because there was something about her that bothered people, and I don't think it was all misogyny.
Well, I have a ton of letters. People are far from holding their letters. We have a number of them. I want to get to those. We have to take a news break, find out what's going on. Ray Graff will bring us up to date. And when we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns. It is the day after Election Day, the 4th of November. I'll let that sink in. Okay, we're ready. We'll take a break, and we'll be back right after.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While there. Standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting.
8 minutes past 10 o'clock on this post-election day, the 4th of November. You know, today would be better if you could actually hug people.
Yes.
I think it would just go a little bit better, but of course we can't because there's still a virus. You know, we have...
Nope.
What'd you say?
I said kittens. kittens and newborn babies.
Yes, absolutely. All right, we have a ton of letters. Let's get to them, and we'll continue our conversation as we go through them. Rosemary is spot on, says Kara, when she says politics is about emotions. David Brooks said the same thing last week, and there's a line in the book, A Vote for Jesus, that says all politics is not local, all politics is emotional. The Democrats better find a way to connect with voters emotionally because reason is not working.
So let's pick up on that and ask the following question, which is, was this the right candidate to connect with people's emotions? From the Democrats.
Well, he's an emotional candidate, right? I mean, I would think.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would get somebody who isn't more.
Joe, what I mean by that is when he speaks.
Oh.
The people react.
You mean the stirring, the rising, the
right.
The oratory.
Well, yes, and yeah. I think they knew it because he started talking about how he visited his wife, his former first wife's grave, and what had happened. Because those are things that are empathetic. But go ahead, please.
I think that's a little hard to answer, in part because Joe Biden was so hampered by the coronavirus. I mean, he is not really a dynamic speaker at this point, and he does stumble over his words, and you know he's can be difficult to follow when he's you know not on a teleprompter. But on the other hand, he was always speaking to empty rooms or to a parking lot full of beeping cars, and I think it's really hard to connect emotionally with people when you're doing that kind of thing. I mean, we can say what we want about Trump's
rallies. I think you're defining emotionally wrong. I don't mean that he makes you feel his tragedy and that he's a warm person. Trump makes people feel safe. He feels like he's in charge and he'll, we'll all be okay. You don't have to wear a mask. It's all going away. You don't have to worry about your money. Look at that stock market. Those are different kinds of – he appeals. Trump appeals viscerally and amazingly effective to people's insecurities and fears. And I call that bigotry, and I hate it, but I can't say it's not effective. This is different than, my wife died, feel sorry for me.
No, I'm not saying that, but I think it's very hard to connect viscerally with people if you're not touching them and if you're on a Zoom call. I just think that made Biden's...
Trump is not touching people, and he's not Zooming.
No, but
he appeals to what they're thinking already.
Hold on. Go ahead, one at a time.
Biden is kind of an old school touchy feely, you know, leave the jokes aside politician, and I think that's kind of what he brings to the game, and he was very hampered in that regard because of the coronavirus. I'm not saying that. I mean, I agree with you that Trump does connect to people very viscerally, and there is a connection that he has with a good chunk of the population. I think it's worth examining what that. Instead of just dismissing people out of hand and saying that they're all rubes or racist, I think it would be better to try to dig into that connection a little bit more. But I do think it's fair to say that Biden was just hampered. I mean, and I don't know. I'm not sure that any of the other Democrats would have connected better than he did.
So
and Joe, you know, you got to remember, Biden is a master at the reality TV show.
And it
showed. I would also toss on the table two other thoughts. One is that if Biden had come down with COVID and not Trump, he would have been blown out of the water.
That would have been a disaster.
I think it would have been absolutely. The other piece about COVID that I've thought a lot about is also think about how difficult it was to go, like, if you think about UAlbany, how many students we would normally have here. So this idea of organizing, particularly the younger voters, and we can argue whether they're going to come out or not. And you know, Rosemary and I have disagreed in the past on this, but I think COVID has played a huge role in multiple different ways. At the end of the day, though, you know, Biden is a nice person, but he's not somebody who generates the type of enthusiasm that Trump does.
Well, you know, Rosemary said something before that was really, I thought, very profound. And I really think that this whole idea of putting this crowd of people without masks in front of you know, out there, and Biden doesn't do that. He won't do it. You know why? Because, as Rosemary says, he is a responsible individual. He knows that's wrong. He knows that that's going to kill people, but it also hurts him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to change the subject slightly, just by the letter that I am about to read. That is a question to us. We have several on this particular subject. Panel, please talk about the Senate, and is there still any hope of Democrats taking over the Senate?
The answer is no.
No.
That ship has sailed.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's close. But it's closer. It's closer. And, please. Go ahead, Jennifer.
And I was going to say, the bigger question is what's going to happen with the stimulus package now after we get the results back that formalizes the, which I see is going to be Republican control of the Senate. So what, how is that going to impact Pelosi's, ability to push as she has been for the stimulus package? And if Trump is elected, then I think it takes the sales completely out of the package that the Democrats were trying to push.
Well, I think Mitch McConnell takes the wind out of those sails. I mean, I think that is going to be one of the big questions. I mean, you know, this result as it stands right now, if Republicans hang on to the Senate, is a disaster for Andrew Cuomo. I mean, he was really, really counting on a blue, you know, a stimulus package that provided aid to blue states. And Mitch McConnell has just been dead set against that. On the optimistic side, though, if Biden wins the presidency and Republicans hold the Senate, I think in a lot of ways that's not a bad result for Biden. I mean, I think he...
Explain that, Chris.
Well, he can work with the Senate. I mean, he is a senator. He is a parliamentarian. He is somebody who can get deals done. And I think if Democrats had taken over, I think Biden would have faced a lot of pressure to do things that would have been hotly, pack the court or add states or do things that really could have derailed his presidency or at least been hotly controversial. I think now they can really focus on the economy, on infrastructure, on the stimulus package. And I think for a lot of ways, this could be beneficial to Biden.
Alan, you agree with that?
I think, no. I think
you were mooning there for a while. I thought you were agreeing
I think he's right for the wrong reason. Chris is right for the wrong reason. Here's what I think is going to happen. As Monk would say, here's what really happened.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is that Mario Cuomo, let's go back to him for a moment. He had that Republican state Senate. And every time he didn't want to do it, because he was a moderate. And every time the progressives were pushing him into something, he would say, can't do it. The Senate won't let me. And I think, you know, Chris is right. It's going to be to his advantage, Biden's advantages as a moderate, to have that Republican pushback.
Right. What? So how was I wrong then? What was wrong about it?
I agree with
I don't
that.
Know, but...
hey, Chris, this is a Dear Diary moment for you. Alan said you were right. So, I mean,
take what you can get,
Rosemary, you were saying?
I agree with Chris. I sort of love that American tendency to split government and not concentrate power too much in the hands of one party. And I also love the idea that you would have, if it works out, a Joe Biden and a Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, willing to deal, to compromise, to go back to governing rather than power forcing things through. We have not had that in a while.
You know, I just
to go back for Jennifer for 1 second. You know, the fact of the matter is that they could have had a deal anytime now. They could have had a deal. They were really, really close. And I think Pelosi didn't want it because she was afraid it was going to endanger the presidential election. I'm not sure what that was all about, but they could have had a deal.
Jennifer, any thoughts on that?
No, I agree. They could have had a deal. But I also agree with Chris that if Biden wins, this could bring some stability. And like Rosemary said, you know, have us focused again on how people are taken care of in this country and policy rather than, you know, all of the politics that's taking place. That is, of course, if Biden wins. But if Trump wins, then, and the Senate is still controlled with Mitch McConnell, I see it. I just don't see. I see more of what we've seen for the last 3 years taking place, and it's going to be the detriment of many people. And then we add the Affordable Health Care Act, which is going before the Supreme Court. We add these other things that are going before the Supreme Court that is now leaning conservative. And it's looking dismal for ordinary, everyday Americans if Trump wins and the Senate continues the way it is.
So,
yeah, the other wild card, Joe, is how is Mitch McConnell going to act? Is he going to be the person that blocks all nominations from a Biden administration, or is he going to accept a role as someone who tries to unite the country?
And he won't have that many. You won't have that many pawns to play with either. In other words,
that's right.
I got an email just a minute ago that I just think is funny, and it's a perfectly reasonable email, but it said, why are you not telling us who won the election? If you're just joining us, we don't know.
Somebody went to sleep early.
Yeah, somebody went to sleep really early or really late and is just waking up now. We don't know. We do know that Michigan and Wisconsin are leading for Joe Biden. We know that Pennsylvania is leading for Donald Trump. We also know that there
Georgia.
Are still three other states on top of that are waiting to be counted. So we don't know, and we may not know for a day, 2 days, maybe Friday, Saturday, .. Okay. So
can I just say that letter sort of, I don't mean to impugn the writer, but that letter sort of epitomizes why Donald Trump wins. They want simple answers. People in this country want simple answers to complicated questions. So listen to Donald Trump. He's already told you who won. He did.
Well, in defense of the letter writer, they could have just been asking for updates as well. So let's not jump too hard on the letter writer.
There was a reason I didn't give their name. Oh, so, Rich.
Nice. Yeah. I'm a nice guy,
you know,
Rosemary.
I think where that got you.
Another thing.
Yes, Jennifer.
Another thing that will be interesting to see is, right, if Trump wins, and this is where we don't know, but if he wins, how do I say this? Typically, in our country's history, modern history, we'll
yes.
say, he's not focused on being reelected again. We know a large part of his prior service as president.
Right.
He was focused on winning the next election. So unless if there's a major change there, which we should all fear, that'll change some of this dynamic when it comes to how the Senate operates, because they will or could still be up for reelection again in the future. Whereas as long as policies stay the way they are when it comes to the president, he will be out in 4 years. So we would have to worry about not having too much damage done in the next 4 years and then rebuilding versus, you know, if I'm stumbling over my words because I don't want to say that there could be something where he will try to run for a third term.
But he said so.
About it. So,
He said so, sure.
I know. I mean, so that's why I'm stumbling on my words, because I guess I don't want to say that out loud, though everything he says he tries to make real. So because he believes it. So, you know, that component of the next couple of years will be interesting, too. But the relationship between the Senate and Trump, and if he wins, and how that's going to affect the future presidential runs.
We have absolutely, I understand. We have a ton of letters, and I just want to go through them quickly. If you hear anything that you want to comment on, just do it, and I'll get to as many. I just want to get to them because obviously a lot of people have taken the time, and they're interesting. So Sharon says, if Trump ultimately loses, he may choose to resign from being president, so the Pence would then pardon him. What do you think? Panel? No? Yes?
Nah.
All right.
Too much ego.
I think there's a chance that happens.
Charles says, if the SCOTUS reverses Roe, it would remove a national bone of contention, reverting it to the states where the legislatures would have to address it. A lot of people I know voted on that issue only in spite of all of the other negatives that are obvious in the current president. Susan writes, again, we are talking talent and charisma. The thing is, we need to get voters to read and consider the platforms of the candidates, and we devolve further into a reality TV show.
Joe, I have to apologize. I have to take it back. I take it back. The idea about Pence, they might do that. I really thought that the letter was predicated on what it had said was if Trump wins. If Trump loses, yeah, he could pull something like that.
Yeah. Rick.
There will be all sorts of shenanigans. And even if Biden wins, it's going to be a huge dumpster fire between now and January.
You know, it's funny you say that. I just wrote down the words dumpster fire on my notebook here, because it's exactly what I was thinking. Rick says, while
I'm spying on you, Joe. I mean, you know what I do.
I have a little piece of tape over my camera and everything. While I'm keeping the faith, I want to point out that the pundits, the pollsters, and the DNC does not understand what they tend to call the Hispanic vote. Grouping the Hispanic vote together is like grouping the European Americans together. American Hispanics come from over 20 countries. They all have different stories to tell and different philosophies on what type of government we should have. To compare a Cuban American to a Salvadorian American is absurd.
And one other thing there, Joe, I'll be in trouble for this, but, you know, groups as a whole have character and have prejudices. And we all know that some Hispanic voters have the same prejudices white voters have towards, for example, people of color. So we don't hear much about that because it's generally regarded as it may be true, but we don't hear about it because people are afraid to touch that because it's a third rail.
Right.
Well, the other thing is, I mean,
I think that's an. Oh.
Go ahead, Chris first, and then we'll go to Jennifer. Go ahead.
Well, I very strongly agree with the letter writer. I think it is ridiculous to group, you know, Hispanic voters together. They do have dramatically different experiences depending on where they came from. They do, however, tend to be overwhelmingly Catholic, and they tend to be more pro-life than most segments of the Democratic Party. So that is an issue where they can sometimes be divided from party leadership.
Back to the letters, we go to Chris, who says,
Jennifer,
I apologize.
I was thinking the same thing that Chris was saying, and I was also thinking, you know, in here what we haven't brought up but needs to be part of the conversation too, is how people are viewing immigration law.
Absolutely.
At this time. Often we talk about the Hispanic, I'm Latinx people in a group, but then we also, in the conversations, assume they're all immigrants, and that's not the case. Some of them are American-born, a couple of generations, and that might have influence how they see immigration differently from other people. Not that they'd be opposed to it in any way, I'm not saying that, but where they put it on the priorities list could be different from other people in that group, but also across America.
And there are always some people who you...
I'm sorry, yeah, Alan.
Well, I was going to say there's always the possibility that some people, some not everybody, not as a whole group, say, pull up the gangplank. I'm here. I don't want anybody else.
Bob or Chris, who was talking?
Chris was going, but Alan, I think you made a really good point with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an economic angle to it, too. I mean, if you're a recent immigrant, you're more likely to have to compete with new immigrants for jobs, too. So it is more complicated than sometimes people make it.
Back to the letters. Rosemary said she previously lived outside the country. Can she tell us where? And by the way, does she have a spare room?
Boy, I can't. If I had a dollar for
it. I dream of going back to Bosnia, and Bosnia has an experience very much like what I think America is going through now, very divided population. Of course, they have three ethnic contingencies or groups that not just hated each other but were killing each other, and a ideologue leader in Milosevic who preyed on that and on religious difficulties, religious differences to foment a war. And it did break out in a hot war in the 1990s. So the lessons that they say are, watch, it's going to get worse, and have a way out, have a keep your money liquid.
Yeah.
Banks could be the next institution you see. Have a house with your own water supply and a garden. That's a good idea, too, because they went in Sarajevo and other places, went through a long siege. And many people say while they stayed and fought for their country, they would not do it again. They saw that happening again. What they see happening in the United States, they would leave. And the most distressing thing to me is that America was always their escape. We have a huge Bosnian population in the United States because when their country imploded, they came here for help. No one's seeking, or few people, well, even if they seek it, they won't get in. They're not looking to America as a refuge anymore.
We have just about a minute before we go over to a newscast, and I want to try to squeeze in a letter or two. Earl says, I see the results as a confirmation that racism and xenophobia are visceral attitudes that run deep in America and turn out voters. Alan was right when he said there are some things you don't even tell your mother. Margie says, we need an agreed-upon time for a scream therapy session. Agree on a time so we don't scare the neighbors. Henry says 2.5 million absentee ballots are starting to be counted today in Pennsylvania. Yes. And Jack says it's not over yet. What I saw last night is that this country has a divide unlike any time since the Mason-Dixon line in the Civil War, a bright line not breaking us north and south as it once did. It weaves in and out of our states, towns, and families. Can we mend this divide? Can one side even understand the other? At this time, I have very little faith that this fracture will repair in the coming decades. If Biden does win, at least the effort will begin. With that, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with our fantastic panel right after this. Hear that? Baby, it ain't over till it's over. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns. A programming reminder that at 11 o'clock we'll be going over to NPR coverage to find out more of what is happening across the country as votes continue to be counted. Here is what we know at this moment if you are just joining us or you have lost track somewhere along the way. There are seven states in play. Wisconsin, Joe Biden is winning 49.5% to 48.8% with 97% of the vote counted. In Michigan, it is Joe Biden ahead 49.3% to 49.1%. In Pennsylvania, Donald Trump is ahead 54% to 44%, 77% of the vote counting. Counted much of that vote still from the city of Philadelphia. North Carolina is still in play as well, 50% to 48% with Donald Trump leading that state. 95% of the vote reported. In the state of Georgia, Trump also ahead 50% to 48%. See these margins so incredibly close. In Arizona, it's Joe Biden ahead 51% to 47%. And in Nevada, 49% to 48% with Joe Biden leading. One thing I did not understand from the BBC coverage at the bottom of the hour was saying that Nevada would not be counting votes today and are waiting till tomorrow, which just seems like a bad time for a roulette and buffet day, but I don't quite get that. But I'm sure there's a good reason, right? Maybe. Here are also things that we know that are being reported. that both campaigns are checking in. Biden's campaign manager, Jennifer O'Malley Dillon, says that Joe Biden is on track to win this election and he will be the next president of the United States. Meanwhile, Bill Stepien, the Trump campaign manager, is projecting confidence in the president's chances in Wisconsin, Michigan, Nevada, and Georgia. He said Wisconsin was headed to, quote, recount territory. Also, we should note that Stepien also said, if we count all legal ballots, the president wins. All right. Then Trump campaign officials tell reporters that if all legally cast ballots, we believe the president will win. But they continue to describe Fox News and their call of Arizona last night as just plain wrong. It was ironic that the one network that the Trump campaign blew up at last night and basically saying that CNN and MSNBC were responsible was Fox. So that's an interesting turn of events there. So that's where we
a rabid dog will bite you. So yeah.
That's right. It is. That's where we are right now. 227. Electoral votes to 213, 227 for Joseph Biden, 213 for Donald Trump, 98 remaining hanging in the balance. So that is where we are. And again, we'll go to more coverage beginning at 11 o'clock and then, of course, Midday Magazine coming up at noon today with Jim Lavoulis and the entire WAMC news team. Let me go back to some letters here and check in with those, and we'll continue, unless anybody has something to bring up prior to that that we have missed. Hearing nothing, we'll go to, why is the split in New York the same as Virginia? What is happening? Is New York turning more Republican, or is it a particular appeal of Trump? Alan?
Well, I think we have to remember that New York was always a split between the Democrats downstate and the Republicans upstate. And you still see some of the residue of that, and that carries over. Nevertheless, as you all probably know, the Senate finally went Democratic in New York State. So now you have a Democratic Assembly, Democratic Governor, and Democratic Senate. But there are, for anybody who rides around and looks for Trump signs, we know that there are an awful lot of Republicans in upstate New York.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we haven't talked about the local races at all, but I think Trump does have some coattails in upstate New York. I mean, Elise Stefanik won in a blowout yesterday, and Antonio Delgado was in a nail biter. I think he's going to win, but I don't think anybody saw that the closeness of that race coming, or maybe somebody did, but most people in the media and most of the people who, you know, are paid to pay attention didn't see it coming.
We go to Steve, who writes, here's some advice for those losing sleep over this. Live your life no matter who holds the White House, the Congress, or the Supreme Court. If your guy doesn't win, you'll have another turn at the plate when the next election comes around. But hanging your happiness, sleep, or mental well-being on the outcome of elections is going to be a losing game most of the time. Your happiness doesn't depend on election outcomes, or at least it should not. I would argue that, yes, it should not. But privilege does speak, and some people's rights are in very grave danger. Right? And they have...
Correct.
They have every right to be losing sleep. I'm not attacking the letter writer, but it is...
If you're going to lose your health care, you have a right to be upset.
Or if your vote isn't being counted, and if you're, yeah, and you're going to be further marginalized, right?
If this country turns totalitarian, you have a lot to lose sleep over. And that's probably why I didn't sleep too well last night.
Jennifer, you were saying, I'm sorry.
I wasn't saying I was saying there's a lot to worry about, but that's what I was thinking. So maybe you heard that.
I did, and I agree with you. Let's see. Scott says, as long as Mitch McConnell runs the Senate, there will be no uniting the country. Chris says, I'm Hispanic. My wife and I, both sergeants in the Marine Corps. In the last 4 years, I've had more incidents of people saying racist things to me because it's okay to. In the last 4 years, I've had people with Trump flags slow down and stare at me while I'm in my own yard. In the last 4 years, if I'm close to the road, I've had Trump and blazing trucks roll coal as they pass by. It's okay to do that now. If this racist wins another 4 years, I can't imagine what is going to be okay to do now. If you voted for him, you've given your tacit approval for them to do so. And see prior letter about why some people are losing sleep. Gina says, the fact that this election is as close as it is illustrates the Democratic Party is unable to address conditions on the ground, a depression, pandemic, low wages, etc. If only this party had embraced universal health care during a pandemic, we might be looking at the landslide Allen expected. Win or lose, this is an abject, disgusting failure. Who wants that one?
That's not true. Universal health care would have given credence to the idea of socialism. That it's a lovely idea, but not framed the way we talk about it now. It's either socialism or independent, rugged individualism. So that would not have saved the Democrats, no.
All right, let's go to... I'm suddenly getting a billion, and I'm not really making that up, from Johanna Hayes, U.S. Congress. And I guess in Connecticut, but I'm getting like 8,000 emails from her. Okay, so I'm a recovering conspiracy theorist, says Dan, and I must say that I'm having a hard time right now. After all the 2016 Trump voter defections from the galvanizing of Democrats to vote, I can't for the life of me understand how Trump can be this close to winning. I feel like this is likely to discourage future voting if Trump wins because it lends to the idea that our votes don't really count. Please send me a lifeline. Well, I mean, if the votes are counted and he wins, then it says more about the country, right? Chris? Well,
yes and no. I mean, there's still a 3 million, less than 3 million gap, but that Biden is leading by nationally.
Right.
Chris,
right.
Chris, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say,
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris and then Rosemary, go ahead.
I think people are being a little too pessimistic. I mean, it looks like Biden is on track to win. I mean, I know a lot of people didn't think this would be a close election, but sometimes you win an election and it's a nail biter. And, I think a lot of us thought that the polls always seemed a little bit too much in Biden's favor. And I can understand people being surprised by this. But, you know, if you are on the Biden side, a win is a win.
I agree.
Rosemary?
Well, I was going to say that I think that close elections do teach lessons. And I've decided in my despair to learn from Tracy Abrams, who lost a heartbreaker and probably was cheated out of a win for her governorship in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And she responded to that by launching and working really hard to stop suppression of the vote and to sign up new voters. And that's something badly needed. And that is something Democrats, in their despair, can work on. We can roll back laws that make it hard to vote. We can make sure there are more resources so polls are open and people don't have to wait 4 hours to vote in New York City. That's nuts. We can do a lot, even in a blue state, and even if we win this, but sorry, even if we lose this by a squeaker.
All right, let's go back to the letters. We have about, do I take a break at 45? I have to? Okay, yes. All right, so we have a couple of minutes here, and then we're going to go up to the top of the hour, and then we'll go over to NPR coverage. Let's see, we have, let's take a break. I'm going to put the letters together and try to truncate them because we have a lot that go over similar ground. So I'll do that real quick. We'll go take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with our panel. Alan Chartier, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Romeo, and Jennifer Burns. Our last call right after this. An All Request Wednesday here on the Roundtable. There you go, Bob.
Oh, Mike and Sarah, that is the best. Thank you so much.
Kudos to Mike and Sarah for doing a great job. The music was heavily curated today, and they just did a fantastic job. Actually, the music's been curated, as always, but especially this week, and we thank them very much for it. Doing a great job, as always. All right. We have about 10 minutes left. We have a lot of letters. Let me roll through them as quick as we can. And please, panel, chime in when you feel necessary. Gina says, Rosemary will appreciate this. Well, I think that's up to Rosemary. After working 16 hours at the polls yesterday, I slept for 4 hours and I had a shot of vodka before I poured my coffee. It's like living in Belarus. There you go.
Rosemary does appreciate it.
Garrett says, as we enter this next phase of the election, Justin Levitt, Loyola Law School professor, said, I heard it around 2:30 this morning, a lawsuit without a statute violation or a constitutional issue is just a tweet without a filing fee, or with a filing fee. Let's see. This election yet again shows the discriminatory, anti-democratic nature of the Electoral College. Voting for the U.S. president, says Anu. A simple majority would elect Biden, H. Clinton, or Gore. Similarly, two senators from each state is discriminatory and anti-democratic in the present U.S. system. Small states rule. All right. Yeah. Let's go.
That's an excellent point, Joe. And you know, the Electoral College is something I think we really should take a look at as a nation.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Alan.
Well, yeah, that's fine. And the Republicans in the Senate will stand right up next to you, Bob, and say, "Yeah, sure, go ahead." I'm telling you now that the Supreme Court is the one that interests me the most. Donald Trump said, he said out loud to people, he wanted Barrett on the court so that when he came to the court in an election thing, oh, yes, didn't he say something about that last night?
Yes.
And came to them with something, no, yeah, it was a rhetorical question, sorry about that. And I want to know whether those people are going to have the guts, and several people have written me about this, are going to have the guts to stand up and say, no, I have a lifetime appointment, and no, you cannot destroy the peaceful transference of power in this country.
I think they will, Alan. I'm an optimist. I agree with the letter writer that there. I mean, I don't know what the case is that you would bring to the Supreme Court. What Donald Trump said last night didn't make any sense. I mean, he said he wanted to get the Supreme Court to stop the voting. Well, the voting did stop. And as long as the votes are counted by some sort of orderly process where we know where, you know, there's a cutoff on the mailing and everything, I just don't think that I don't think there's a legal case. I mean, you know, there's a lot we still don't know, but it doesn't seem to me there's a legal case for the Supreme Court to even really dig into.
Well, there have been reports all day long about Trump having an army of lawyers ready to go and do battle. And you all know about lawyers. They can figure out ways to bring lawsuits one way or the other. It's one of the reasons the system stinks, because, you know, if somebody sues you, you got to find some money to defend it. And the same thing goes with doing the suing yourself.
Let's go to
He's made a history of circumventing the law with his attorneys. I mean, look at his
sure.
history. This is no different than anything else he's done. So this is absolutely in keeping with what Donald Trump is.
Justin says, I hope the Democratic establishment, who are responsible for telling their party what they wanted instead of listening to their people and brushing off people who were trying to tell them something, are proud of themselves. Why did we decide voting against Trump was more important than voting for a more progressive future? Robert says, this is not the country I thought I was living in. Even if Joe Biden eventually wins this election, I am very disappointed in my fellow Americans. If they can vote for President Trump, which indicates how they feel about issues of social justice, equality, immigration, and the environment. And when will the Democrats get candidates to run that can actually win? Well, one negates the other. I mean, if he does win.
And there is definitely the possibility that Biden's going to win.
Right. Rick says, if Trump got the Libertarian vote in Massachusetts, Biden would have lost. I think the same can be acknowledged in many states. Our country is sadly split. We go to Sally, who says, too much is at stake.
and a lot of exclamation points. Trump is a serious danger to this country. He's a racist, has no sense of decency, honor, dignity, compassion, and any of the good things we like to think of ourselves of having. We have the right to lose sleep and may continue to lose sleep for 4 more years if Donald Trump wins.
And half the country voted for him with everything you've just said.
Catherine says, I honestly thought we were going to have a blue wave. My heart is broken. I obviously don't know or understand my country. I'm also sad that Jamie Harrison lost to Lindsey Graham and that Mitch McConnell has won again. We go to Mark, who says to the panel, I want to thank you all and all of your panel guests for providing us with daily therapy and insightful political commentary and analysis. I went to bed last night hopeful for the Democratic ticket as polls closed across the West. I woke to find myself in a deep state of concern for our nation, its leadership, and society that has simply lost its way and has lost its moral compass.
Isn't that interesting? Because in my case, it was exactly the opposite. I went to bed depressed, feeling all was lost. I woke up and said, hooray, hooray.
Well, and the literator goes on to say that I simply can't wrap my head around the fact that the election is even close, given the stark contrast of the Democratic and Republican tickets. We have definitely entered a new reality. I now firmly share Rosemary's concern for our nation, our democracy, and for nearly a majority of our society. Indeed, 50% of our society has chosen Darth Vader over Obi-Wan, and for a host, in my view, incredibly selfish or ill-informed reasons, I simply can't understand. Thank you for helping me cope with these troubling times, writes Mark.
At the same time, though, Joe, we have to, as a people, figure out how we start to have dialogue with people we disagree with. I mean, that to me is just essential if we're going to be able to move forward as a country. I don't know how to do it, but I'm pledging right now that I'm going to do a much better job than I have in the past of trying to understand and trying to reach out.
Yeah, I agree with that, Bob. I mean, I hear a lot of people who are just dismissing half the population as racist or irredeemable. And I just think, you know, politics is still about persuasion. And if you just tell people that they're bad people because of the way they voted, you're not going to win them over to your side. It just doesn't work that way. You're hardening the feelings on both sides.
Jennifer?
And
sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, and but I didn't want to win people.
Jennifer first, and then we'll go to Jennifer, Allen, and then Rosemary. We'll go in that order. Go ahead.
I'll give up my spot. Go ahead.
All right, Jennifer and Rosemary, go ahead.
Really, we have to remember that not all Republican voters are bad people, but they are, especially in this era right now when it comes to dealing with the pandemic, looking at their 401ks, they're looking at their taxes, they're looking at those things, and against the backdrop of COVID and unemployment and all of these other issues, they're saying, you know what, these things matter for my future in this, you know, in a really solid way that I need to keep intact. And if I got to deal with Trump for 4 years, well, it's only 4 more years. And so they're prioritizing in a different way. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad people. They're concerned like everyone else is, and they're looking out for their best interests, like everybody else is, including Democrats. But we have to prioritize things sometimes if you're an African-American or a Cuban immigrant, or if you're, you know, in a different way, because how the policies have been systemically racist or sexist impact what we value.
Rose,
you know, we haven't talked about COVID very much, and it is an open question how it affected this election. I mean, I do wonder if some of Biden's talk about a dark winter ahead and kind of pushing, kind of being on the side of shutdowns may have hurt him with people who are concerned about their jobs or concerned about their, you know, their economic future.
Rosemary, we have about a minute. Go ahead.
Okay, I just disagree with all of this. People may not be racist and horrible, but all Republicans who support Trump, and that's about 95%, are enabling him. So that's like people who didn't really think Hitler had great ideas, but they helped him to get into power. That's what we're doing now. And I don't want to have conversation with them. I don't think there's room for compromise or meeting in the halfway. I want to get enough people who believe that he should, Trump and his ilk should be removed from power, that they will vote. And that means, I think, young people who care about the environment, old people who should care about their health, people who care about their jobs and who realize that crushing the virus is the way to get their jobs back on an even keel. And I want them voting. That's what I'm going to concentrate on. I think it's crazy. For 4 years now, we've been saying, oh, we have to understand the other side, blah, blah, blah. They're so upset and we're not addressing their needs. That's not going to work.
Well, I don't know how you do it without conversation and talking. But we're out of time. I want to thank everybody. I want to let Elaine have the last word. I've saved this letter. She wrote it at 9:31 this morning, but it is my favorite from the morning. Elaine says, look, I'm nauseously optimistic. I think that is a perfect way of putting it. Deep and sincere thanks. Alan, thank you so much. Thanks to our wonderful panel this morning, Chris, Bob, Rosemary, and Jennifer, you're all wonderful in helping us make sense of this morning. We're going to go over to NPR coverage, Midday Magazine at noon, and obviously updates throughout the day right here on WAMC. My thanks to the entire crew. We'll be back.